dedicated to your family, guests, and supporting the community. Piasecki Althaus Funeral Home, honoring personal legacies in the circle of life. 262-658-4101.
Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's. Visit andreasgifts.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, books, and more. Andrea's, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911.
Gustav Mahler's remarkable First Symphony headlines the Lake Geneva Symphony's first concert of the season, Saturday, November 19th at Calvary Community Church in Williams Bay. For tickets, visit lakegenevaorchestra.org. The symphony is a proud supporter of WGTD. Support comes from Gateway Technical College. Indispensable and in demand. Be that person with an administrative professional degree. Classroom and real-world experience. Learn online or in the classroom. Median starting salary, $31,000. Information at gtc.edu.
WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer. My gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah. No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg holds the Morning Show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 in your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. First of all, a little history. The University of Wisconsin-Parkside terminated its teacher certification programs in 2010 due to a variety of issues. I, Dwayne Olson, your host, was a faculty member in the earlier program. As a result of this action, a year-long study took place in which today's teacher certification programs at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside were conceptualized, approved by the University of Wisconsin Systems Board of Regents, and ultimately approved by the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, the state agency that regulates all teacher certification programs in Wisconsin. With that background, our guests today are Dr. Nancy Whitaker, Chair of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside's Institute of Professional Educator Development, and Vice Provost Gary Wood. Welcome to Education Matters, both of you. It's good to have you here today.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you.
Also, as a matter of background, let me indicate that the Provost is the person who is responsible for the academic programs at each of the 13 universities in the University of Wisconsin system. The Vice Provost, then, works with the Provost to oversee and develop these academic programs. And teacher ed at UW-Parkside does report to the provost office. So to get started, why don't you, each of you, tell our listeners a little about your professional backgrounds. Dr. Nancy Whitaker, chair of UW-Parkside's Institute of Professional Education Development. We'll have you go first, ladies before gentlemen here.
Thanks, Dwayne.
You're welcome.
Most recently, I was a high school teacher and administrator in an Illinois suburban community. And I've also taught at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Northwestern University, and DePaul University.
Well, that's great background there. Okay, so you have both high school background and university background. That's great. Okay, and Vice Provost Gary Wood.
Thanks, Dwayne, and thanks again for the invitation. I started my career at UW-Parkside in 1989. As a chemistry professor, so my background and training are all in biochemistry.
And that's how I knew you at Parkside.
Right? So at the end of this, at the end of December, I'll be starting my 29th year there. 26 of those were in the chemistry department. I've been in the provost's office. This is my third year in the provost's office.
Okay, so you've got some good experience in the provost's office as well. Also, to get us started, tell us, our listeners, briefly about the several levels of teacher certification that are currently available at UW-Parkside. And I guessed what it is that you have. So I start out with elementary ed. So.
Sure. This is so. Nancy and I agreed ahead of time that I'd get the easy questions.
Oh, there you go. Okay,
I'll take
great.
This one. So, right, we have a major in elementary education. So this major has been approved, and students are actively involved in it. In the state of Wisconsin, this is the major that results in licensure for grades 1 through 8.
1 through 8. Okay.
Right. We also have a major in secondary education. This one has also been approved, and students are actively involved. Again, in Wisconsin, this is the major that leads to licensure in grades 6 through 12.
Okay.
We have two new majors coming on board soon, special education and early childhood education.
Okay.
Early childhood education is the pre-K through grade 3 licensure in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Those have gone through all of our institutional approval processes, through the UW System Board of Regents approval process, and we're awaiting approval from the Department of Public Instruction for those. And I should point out that the early childhood education program is a collaborative program with Gateway Technical College and blends well with their early childhood program that's already
wonderful.
In place.
Wonderful. That's great.
We have a couple of other things coming along. These aren't majors. These are our add-on license pathways, one in English as a second language and a related one in bilingual education.
Ah.
The difference between those is students take essentially the same coursework for both, but to be a licensed bilingual educator, you really have to be bilingual and have the language proficiency.
Under control.
Yes, to be an ESL to earn the ESL license, you do not have to pass the same language proficiency test.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. And certainly, my understanding is that ESL and bilingual teachers are really in short supply. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's one of the biggest state shortage areas, and I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But
oh, okay, great. Right. Okay, wonderful.
And I should add, as we were creating these new programs, the ESL and bilingual are awaiting DPI approval as well. But we really did respond to requests from our local school districts to fill needs. So we didn't just make these up because we thought they were good ideas. But things like ESL and bilingual, we were asked to do this by the community, and we responded.
Wonderful. Oh, that's great. And I'm sure that the community appreciates that too, or the local school districts appreciate the efforts that Parkside has gone through. Okay. So anything you want to add to that then, Nancy? Or?
No, I know that Gary's going to talk about elementary education and how that they have an academic minor.
Okay, let's talk about elementary education then, because that certainly, at least in the past, was one of the very popular certifications that Parkside offered.
Right. So, again, the elementary education major leads to licensure for grades 1 through 8. Doesn't include kindergarten. That's why we added the early childhood major. And it does require students to also complete an academic minor. And that's important because of the licensure in grades 1 through 8, this gives some flexibility to the teachers and to the districts to, you know, to move between elementary schools and middle schools. But teaching second grade is a far different thing than teaching science to 6th and 7th graders.
Right, exactly.
So it really is important that teachers have that content minor added to their elementary ed major.
So what are they taking? What minors are the maybe, say, the more popular ones in terms of people seeking 1 through 8 certification?
Well, we have a number of them that are available. Nancy, yes. Maybe you can comment on which ones are the most popular.
Well, we know that we have a lot of students who want to pursue the English minor.
Okay.
Because the English language arts minor, because they come to us as an English major, which they did in the previous program
right.
as well. You had a lot of English majors, and they're translating into English minors.
Right.
We have a lot of students pursuing math.
Okay, math. Okay,
which
good.
Is important, and we're just launching the biological sciences minor. So
okay.
We're hoping to pursue those STEM, you know, the STEM disciplines in elementary school as much as we can.
Okay, and for the sake of our listeners, define STEM for them, okay?
Science, technology, engineering, mathematics.
Mathematics. Okay, and then also you add A to it sometimes. Do you?
STEAM, the arts, yes. Mm-hmm.
They add the arts to it. The arts people became concerned and got themselves added to that. So we talk about STEM and STEAM. Okay. So, and I can see that the biology will be a very interesting major then, or minor, I guess, for these 1 through 8 people. Anything else on 1 through 8 that we should talk about before we move on to secondary?
Well, I wanted to add that the ESL add-on license will be something that if somebody comes through as an elementary or an early childhood major, they can always add on that license, and they'll be much more marketable.
Okay, okay. So a person could get then 1 through 8 certification, then as an elementary, middle school teacher, and then add the ESL or the bilingual to that.
Exactly.
Okay, and be more marketable. That's great. Okay, must students seeking secondary certification have an academic major? And so tell our listeners about that.
Yes, that's correct. So this is a requirement by from the Department of Public Instruction.
Right.
That students teaching at students earning the grade 6 through 12 license and teaching at the high school level need to have a major not just in education but in another discipline as well. For example, to teach advanced chemistry classes at the high school level, students need to have a major in chemistry.
Right.
And so the way we've constructed this at our institution is students effectively have a double major in secondary education plus their second major in one of the content areas, and there are a number of them that we've aligned with the secondary education that they can choose from that range from the sciences to the social sciences to the humanities,
to English and that and,
right.
And so on. Do you have art and music certification too yet, or is that something that's coming? Or are we later in our program we'll talk about?
No, we have music that's going to be K through 12. So we have instrumental general and choral general, which are two different tracks that our students can do, and those are already in place. We've got our first student teacher in that program this spring.
This semester, or this coming semester.
Coming semester,
Oh, that's great. Instrumental or vocal?
Instrumental.
Instrumental.
And he's at Bradford. So
going to be at Bradford. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. Okay, they'll get a good experience there at Bradford. Okay. Popular, then, in terms of secondary certification, what seems to be English, history, science? Of course, we need more science and math.
We've got a number. When I'm thinking about my classes right now, I've got mathematics, I have English, and I have history majors. History,
right.
Poli-sci, geosciences. We've got students who are interested in taking a major and a minor. So that's probably equally split. Some science students as well, but mostly English and math.
Oh, okay. And now what about the change in the curriculum at the high schools in Racine to this more business-oriented curriculum? Has that affected students thinking about, they call them academies in Racine Unified. Has that changed students' interest in certifications or not?
Not quite yet.
Not yet.
But we've been talking with Racine about that, and we know that that's their goal with this, is that they're going to be able to attract students to teaching while they're in high school.
Okay, so right. And in fact, I talked to somebody earlier, in fact, a counselor at Horlick High School, about the idea of creating an academy dealing with education there. And so because someone had given me some information that Des Moines, Iowa had a teacher education stream in their programs. So that sounds exciting to me.
And they do have education built into one of their academies. I can't remember the names of them off the top of my head. But right, and we're exploring dual enrollment options, so students could be simultaneously enrolled while they're in high school in courses that earn them credit in high school and at the university. We're piloting that this semester, actually, not in education, but with one of our political science courses.
Oh, that's really wonderful, because that means then that students can get university credit, and then it saves them then enrolling in those courses and saves money.
That's right.
When they get to their college university experience.
We've been talking with Kenosha about that as well, and I think it would be a wonderful opportunity for some of the teachers in the school districts to be able to be those instructors. So that's a leadership opportunity for them as well.
Oh, absolutely.
As part of their dual enrollment.
Wonderful. Okay, I'm really glad to hear that, because I'm sure that they would welcome that as well, too. Mm-hmm. Okay, clinical programs. One of the aspects emphasized in these programs is the clinical programs, the programs in area schools Let's talk to our listeners about those. So the initial clinical program, what is that?
What we do at Parkside is something that's really pretty unique in the United States, is we do something called a co-teaching model.
Okay.
And from the first education class that they take, they're going to be out in the schools for 20 hours during the semester. So they'll be working in the schools for every single semester, even before they're formally admitted to the program.
Ah.
They're paired with a teacher, called a mentor teacher, in our area schools.
Wonderful. And are you getting good response then from the schools on the part of teachers who want to be mentors then?
Well, I can give you some numbers, Duane.
Sure.
In the 2014-15 year, we started with four teacher candidates,
yes,
four of our students, and we had four schools and four teachers. This past year, we grew to 210 people at Parkside who wanted to be teachers, and 102 teachers who wanted our students in the schools, and we had 27 schools participating. So the teachers have been wonderful, and our program is as good as the teachers in our communities, and our teachers are terrific.
Right. Oh, that's really, really wonderful, because I'm sure that they enjoy the privilege of being involved in getting somebody going in programs.
And that's exactly what one of the administrators in Kenosha said. They said this is an opportunity for our teachers to be leaders. It's something where they feel like they're giving back to the next step of the profession.
Right.
And the students are spending, when they start, 20 hours a semester. It goes up to 120 hours a semester.
Ooh.
So every time that they're in a classroom, they're learning more. And the best part for us is we feel like we're giving back to the school district, because our students are not just sitting and observing. They're working with a small group. They're pulling out a student who needs some extra help. So they're really benefiting the classrooms that they're in.
And for these clinical programs, do they go back to the same teacher in the same classroom, or do they move on to other classrooms, or both?
Well, DPI tells us, for example, for an elementary teacher for grades 1 through 8, they have to have an early elementary placement,
okay,
they have a middle elementary, and they have a middle school. So before their student teaching, they will have been in three different levels of placements. One will be in an urban school, one will be a suburban school, and one will be west of the I or a more rural school. So they'll have a range of placements.
Oh, wonderful. And that helps them decide, where do I want to be then as a teacher? What level of grade and where do I want to be?
Absolutely. And what's interesting, it's helped a lot of students to make the decision that they want to be in an urban school.
Oh, wonderful.
And I think that's a wonderful thing for us. So when they come to student teaching, they may have had as many as 240 hours in the classroom before they student teach for 18 weeks.
That's incredible. That is really, really important then, in terms of not only letting them know what that teaching is for them,
mm-hmm,
as well as develop knowledge and skills about working with kids.
And all of this is supervised by one of us or by one of our wonderful retired teachers who's coming in to be a university supervisor for us as well. So I think that's the best part, actually.
Oh, that's great. Gary, do you want to add anything to this or not?
Sure. Just that, I mean, we decided it was really important to get teacher candidates, I mean students, out there in the field early on in the program so that they would know early on in their program whether this was for them or not, as you mentioned, rather than the old model where students wouldn't sometimes get out there to interact with kids in classrooms until they were doing their formal student teaching, and that's not the time you want to find out that you don't want to do that.
Yeah, and see, that was the model that I was educated,
mm-hmm,
under, you know, a long time ago, eons ago, you know, and that sort of thing.
And then I just wanted to add also that we've had extremely positive feedback from the teachers who have participated in this co-teaching program. I was at a meeting where we asked something like, if teachers go to an information session about participating and becoming a co-teacher, you know, what kind of yield do we get from those information sessions? And they said 150%. And I thought, you know, that it was a funny exaggeration. But they said, no, really, 10 of us came to the meeting. We went and told our friends, and 15 of us came back to participate in the program.
Wonderful. Well, that says that they really are appreciating the contribution that they can make and appreciating the contribution that these students make to their classrooms.
Absolutely.
And that's really great. Okay, let's go on and talk about, let's special education. I assume you have a course dealing with exceptional child or special education and that sort of thing. Is there a practicum tied to that too?
It's part of every practicum they have because they identify all of the students who have special learning needs in
IEPs.
The classroom. IEPs, 504s, and English language learners. So in every classroom that they're in, they have to contribute to the learning of those students in some way. And they have to reflect on that. And they have to plan with their mentor teacher in the school as to how they can best assist those students. So it's in coursework, but also in practice.
Wonderful. Define IEP for our listeners, because you and I know. But
right, and I'm a special education parent, so I know that from the parent side and from the teacher
right.
side. An individual education plan that's crafted by school district personnel. They work with the parents, and it really prescribes the best course of assistance for that child, and it's renegotiated every year. And so a 504 is a different kind of accommodation with mostly additional time, but it's just a different level of support for student learning.
Is it a higher level? I don't know 504.
It's less.
Oh, it's less.
It depends on the district, but usually it's less. It may be something as simple as extended time on tests.
Oh, wonderful.
So it could be, you know, something that helps the child, but it isn't something that it happens all the time.
And the IEP, for the benefit of our listeners, is a legal document that the school district then must comply with in terms of providing educational experiences for that particular child.
Right, and every teacher who has that child must comply with that IEP. So
right.
that's federal law that they have to do so.
Okay, let's talk about student teaching then. Now you're getting people out in student. Is there anyone student teaching this semester? Have you gotten that?
Yes, I have a student who's student teaching at Case High School.
Oh,
and
yes.
She's in the wonderful history department at Case. So she's
wonderful.
They're really taking good care of her. And we've got a small cohort of students who will be student teaching next semester from elementary and secondary. I think we've got 7 student teaching in the spring.
Okay, so you're gradually getting people at the student teaching level.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you that the chair of the Department of Social Sciences at Case High School is one of my former students whom I see from time to time and chit-chat with and that sort
yeah,
of thing.
She's great. She's wonderful.
Wonderful, yes. Wonderful young woman. Okay, so you're getting started in student teaching. And then, so next year then, you have any sense for how many student teachers you'll have, say, fall semester?
Well, I'm thinking that usually we're admitting probably 30 students every year to the program. We will probably have between 5 and 10 at the outside student teaching in a given semester. And the semester before they student teach, they're also in the same placement. So they're in that classroom for 2 full semesters. They do their clinical there the semester before, and then they just easily segue into student teaching.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, because then they go in really knowing the kids, having a knowledge of the students, and then also then having a knowledge of what goes on in terms of curriculum in that classroom.
And they get to see the beginning of school when the teacher is really working with the kids for the first time and through all of the assessments that the students have to work through during the year. So seeing that soup to nuts version of a school year is really important, I think.
Right. So when they go on to their first teaching position, they have also experienced the beginning of a school year as well as the end of
Absolutely.
A school year.
That's right.
We did have some feedback about that from brand new teachers who go to their first job and realize, I have no idea how to set up a classroom. I never watched anybody do that. So it's
yes.
great. It's great to have them there at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. So they come in with an experience and that sort of thing. Yeah, like when I student taught, when I taught my first year of teaching, I had no idea about setting up a classroom.
Sink or swim. That was the philosophy.
Well,
I remember.
And we did it. I guess we
right.
swam, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So here we are. Does the Wisconsin Improvement Program through the Department of Public Instruction, does that still exist, providing internships, or do you know?
It does, and I get requests. I got 2 requests this past week from the for students. We don't have students in those that are ready to do that.
Yes.
It would be harder for the students in our program to do that because of the co-teaching model.
Ah.
Because we want them to spend a year in a placement and really work closely with a teacher. And the internship model is a little bit more distant in terms of support. So
yes.
for us, not a great fit, but for it still exists, and we have someone who is very well versed in those programs in our office. So.
And so maybe then, it may, as we move into the future, it
mm-hmm.
might be a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Could be. absolutely.
Yeah, I know a young man that I had as an intern in one of the Kenosha middle schools, you know, who is a principal of a middle school in Sun Prairie.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Wisconsin. And so that was a good program, too, but you have to fit it into what it is, your model that you're doing. Okay. Is there anything else we should say about clinical programs and so forth? We've pretty well covered it. Okay. So tell our listeners about the tests that are required by the Department of Public Instruction the students seeking teacher certification must take and pass. And it seems to me that's an area that has really grown since I retired and since I was in teacher ed.
We talk a lot about testing.
Yes.
And I think with our sister schools around the state, we talk a lot about the requirements for tests and which tests our students find challenging across every program, public and private. Students have to start with, to get admitted to a teacher ed program, they need to take the Praxis Core, which is the old PPST, which you probably remember.
I know the PPST,
right?
Yes.
This is Praxis Core, and it's math, reading, and writing. They can take them together or take them separately, but they have a prescribed score they have to pass. Then they have to take, when they finish most of their coursework before they student teach, they take the Praxis 2, which is a subject matter test. So additional Praxis. The elementary and special education students need to take the Foundations of Reading test, which is very challenging across the state for every program. Students end up taking this multiple times to be able to pass it. Uh-huh. So far, knock on wood, our students have done it on the first or second time. So it's been positive for our students. And then at the end this year, for the first time, we have a performance test that's called the EdTPA. So the students have to video their class, write about it, crop their video to be able to address video excerpts, talk about assessments. So it really is a performance assessment. So some students have three assessments they have to pass. Some have four.
Okay. And how about the cost on those tests for students? Because I think that's a real issue, too, that we need to think about.
It could cost as much as probably around $750 if they pass the Praxis Core, all of them, on the first time. If they have to retake any of those three subtests, it's going to add on $90. So for some students, it could go as much as $1,000 for the total cost.
Oh, my God. From $750 to $1,000, mm-hmm. then.
Yeah. Some schools are putting some of those test costs as a course fee. So students can use their financial aid to pay for them, like the Foundations of Reading test or the EdTPA.
Okay.
So they'll build that cost into a course fee to try to make it a little bit more affordable for students.
Okay. What about how many reading classes do the elementary certification people, elementary middle people have to take and secondary people?
They'll take two. And the secondary have one that blends reading in the content areas.
Okay.
So they have it how they can teach literacy across whatever their subject area is, whether it's math or social studies.
Okay. And then the people who teach those reading courses then know what's expected then in terms of passing those kinds of tests.
Absolutely. Yes, they do. They're really prepared directly for that Foundations of Reading test. The elementary people are very clearly.
Oh, that's wonderful. But see, now that makes a point that's too about what teachers and even secondary teachers need to know about reading, which makes good sense. I mean, I taught high school social studies, and you had to read, you know, history in order to know the knowledge or gain the knowledge.
And when I was hiring teachers, one of the questions we always had to ask was, how are you going to teach literacy in your visual arts class, your music class? So we always had to ask that question as part of a job interview. So I'm glad, actually, because I think it really helps the whole school and helps the child.
Yeah. So, and maybe something to our listeners, if you want to help out any education students, maybe you could provide education departments with some funds for scholarships for these kids, you know, to take these tests.
Absolutely. And that's,
and we've been trying to offer some supplemental instruction opportunities to help students prepare for these tests. Now that we have some experience and understand which parts of the various tests students tend to have difficulty with,
right,
we can offer some prescribed study materials and extra tutoring sessions and so on to help them prepare.
Right. And are there, I suppose, there are teachers out in the schools, too, that can help you with those kinds of, that kind of information and background, because they have probably had those experiences, too.
And some of the teachers out in the schools will need to pass the Foundations of Reading test to be able to continue in their positions. So it's sort of making its way back to the schools as well as in teacher preparation programs.
Oh, so this is part of their PDPs then, their professional development plan?
Depends on the teacher. Yeah.
Oh, okay, and depends on the teacher and what the school that he or she is in and the grade level they're teaching.
And if they're a teacher assistant, do they want to get their license, then they know they will have to pass these same tests.
Yeah. You know, I this strikes me that people have no idea what's expected in terms of preparing a teacher today with the knowledge and skills to work with kids. And there's so much more depth to it than there was, say, when I was prepared, you know, as a teacher.
And I know Gary's going to talk about that when he talks about Jamie Vollmer.
Okay.
Because we both are big fans of his, and I know that you are too. So,
well, let's talk about Jamie Vollmer then. Jamie Vollmer, an Iowa businessman, wrote a book in 2010 titled Schools Cannot Do It Alone, Building Public Support for America's Public Schools, in which he presented an extensive list of tasks assigned to schools and teachers today that go beyond responsibilities assigned in an earlier period of American history. Do teachers and schools have the time and resources needed to take on all these responsibilities? So go ahead, Gary, and talk about
Jamie
Vollmer.
Well, when Jamie Vollmer gives this talk, he usually starts out by saying something like, when you encounter somebody who is complaining about the quality of our schools and says something like, well, all they have to do is teach, you know, the basics, so what's so difficult about that? Then Jamie Vollmer points out, and he has this visual, which I brought with me. Obviously, your listeners can't see it, but it's a five-page foldout that lists about 150 separate items that state and federal governments have required schools to do. And these things range from items like hearing and vision screening, so we expect schools to be healthcare providers.
Yeah.
Nutritional programs, so we expect, you know, schools to be provide nutritional services. And then a whole range of specific items, including drug and alcohol awareness, gang prevention programs, teen pregnancy prevention programs, all of these things that we expect and require schools to spend time doing beyond just the basics that we also expect and require them to do. And districts and teachers do their best, but I think the answer to your question is no, there's really not enough time in the day or enough resources to do all of these things well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. See, Vollmer's list really shocks me. So if anybody wants to read the book, it's by Jamie Vollmer, and it's J-A-M-I-E. And his last name is Vollmer, V-O-L-L-M-E-R. He's an Iowa businessman and educated as a lawyer, yeah, and that sort of thing. And he's really done a service, I think, to help people understand just the challenges facing schools today. And consequently, I guess we get a lot of criticism of schools. They're not doing this, they're not doing that, something new. And, well, come on, folks, what do you want schools to do? So, okay, well, anything else to say? You know, Vollmer was here in Racine several years ago, and I keep wanting to know what was the impact of Vollmer on Racine Unified, or I don't know whether he's ever been in Kenosha Unified or not.
I saw him at Uline last year because our chancellor had me go to the Kenosha Area Business Association, sponsored him a year ago May. And he gave his speech, and he had the same handout, and he was very entertaining. And he really put the charge out, and he said, it takes a community to build the schools. So he is such a consensus builder, and he brings the community together. And I know he did that when he came to Racine as well. So he points things out, and then he says, okay, here's some things that you can do.
But he says the schools need resources to do those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know today's Milwaukee paper then talks about the state superintendent asking the legislature for $707 million more dollars for the K-12 schools in Wisconsin for this coming biennium.
Right.
So we shall see, you know, what happens. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to add, not, you know, all the extra things that we expect schools to do and require them to do, are some of them are things you never would have thought would exist, you know, even a few years ago. Internet bullying, for example. We have to, you know, educate students about about that. Intruder lockdown training.
Yeah.
We have, you know, programs dealing with things like that. So these are really serious issues that we can't just sort of, you know, brush off and only spend a few minutes on. The schools really have to dedicate some time and resources to these programs.
Right. At this time, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTD HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, I am visiting with Dr. Nancy Whitaker, chair of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside's Institute of Professional Educator Development, and Vice Provost Gary Wood. Our program has focused on the several teacher certifications that are now available in UW-Parkside's Institute of Professional Teacher Development. Now back to our program. Shortage of teachers, that's one of the issues that I read about in the paper and so forth. And I do know that, I guess, in the northern part of the state of Wisconsin has particular shortages. Talk about that.
They had a lot of those coming out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in August, and districts that were desperate for teachers. And what has happened in Wisconsin, I think partially as a result of Act 10.
Yes.
But that teachers have become more mobile. There's variable pay scales, so that teachers, where you would probably say 15 years ago, a teacher would stay in one district for probably most of their professional life, now they're moving, because they will get a higher pay someplace else. And so I know in different parts of a state, and I've talked to colleagues in the center of the state as well, and they said it's really a problem because you, especially at the high school level for math and science teachers, there's one district that was willing to pay for the college, part of the college education of a student, if they would agree to come to that school district post-graduation and teach. Now, that's a lovely thing for someone if that was going to work out, but it's just because of that shortage, and it's in math and science, early childhood, cross-categorical special education. I was looking, it's available on the Department of Public Instruction website, but up to 75% of the school districts in our state have reported particular shortages. And they measure that by the number of emergency licenses.
Uh-huh.
And so if we're thinking statewide, I've got the numbers for just Kenosha and Racine from last year. Kenosha issued in 15-16 37 emergency licenses across the district for people who have a bachelor's degree, and they get an emergency license for one. It can be renewed for another year.
Yes.
Racine issued 77. The predominant number for both of those was cross-categorical special education. Bilingual, bicultural was also part of that as another area, but especially cross-categorical special education and early childhood special education.
Oh, my.
So that's across, and that's just representative of a state. But when you look at the staffing survey from all of the districts, they're talking about the same thing, that we really want teachers to come. We know it's competitive. And there's some poaching going on, I understand, from some of my colleagues in other schools.
Yes, I'm reading about that and hearing about that too. And in fact, I read not too long ago about a teacher that moved from one school district to another and got an increase in salary of $5,000 for,
yes,
and so on. So, like, school districts are poaching teachers from other school districts here in the state of Wisconsin.
And this problem is likely to persist for some time, because not only is there a shortage of teachers, especially in certain areas, as Nancy mentioned, but there aren't enough students in the pipeline. That is, enrollment in educator preparation programs all across the state is down. So if you look at the open positions, the teachers who are on emergency licenses, the number of retirements that are likely to occur in the new future, and use that as your measure of how many teachers will we need. And then you also look at enrollments, current enrollments in education programs in both public and private institutions. The math is obvious. There aren't enough students in the pipeline now to fill all those positions.
Okay, and emergency licenses are not the way to go, because those people are not anywhere near fully certified in terms of being able to respond to kids' needs in terms of what's expected.
And they're required to take coursework as part of their emergency license, which they do.
Yes.
Because we have students who are taking coursework from us. They'll pick up courses to be able to show that they're making progress on their emergency license.
Right.
So that's one way to fill that in the short term. But there's a lot of ways to address the shortage. One thing we do know when we're thinking about teacher preparation programs versus things like Teach for America programs,
yes,
and Relay and some not-for-profit programs is that the number of years that the teachers will stay in the field is longer after if they are the graduate of a teacher preparation program. So if we're thinking about what's the best investment for retention, it's a program. But something like Teach for America, and I have a niece who taught for Teach for America, and she had no interest in teaching after those 2 years. But she did it for 2 years, and it was more like a Peace Corps experience.
Yes.
Parallel, like for many years ago. But she wasn't interested in remaining. She was a neuroscience student, but she didn't want to stay in teaching, but for 2 years it was okay. So I want people to stay in the schools and have
right.
districts feel like they can make an investment in a new teacher.
So what are we going to have to do as citizens of our various communities to attract people? I always said to people at Parkside, I am in competition with every other major in this university to get good people into teacher education.
Well, there's a couple of things that are happening all at the same time. The Department of Public Instruction, DPI, has passed some emergency rules this summer that will allow people to get a license by taking an exam. So if they have one teaching license, they can get another license in a close field like chemistry to biology by taking an exam, by taking the Praxis 2. So we've got some of those things that are happening. They are offering 5-year contracts to teachers who are nearing retirement or who have just retired so they can come back, get a 5-year contract, and continue teaching without jeopardizing their retirement.
Ah, okay.
And they're also looking at ways that they could expand the renewal of emergency licenses. And one of them particularly is for 8th grade algebra, which we are in such need of in Racine and Kenosha. So that will really favor our district. So the idea, the DPI really knows about this. They've also created an initiative called the Talent Development Program.
Yes.
And they're meeting. They met this summer, last spring and this summer. Tammy Huth and Tony Evers convened this group of public school teachers and administrators, and they met, and they've generated all kinds of ideas for initiatives to, like you're saying, attract people to teaching, retain them, sometimes retrain them, and they're going to be able to join the teaching profession. So they're being responsive to say, we know we need to do this. We're working on relaxing some of the licensure issues. We're working on recruitment issues and focusing on those shortage areas. So they're sending, they sent out and are resending a survey to all of the school districts to say, what exactly do you need?
Yes.
So that's going to be great information. Gary and I are working on some projects locally that are going to be sort of fast-tracking people who are on emergency licenses right now. Do you want to talk about the STRIVE?
Yeah, good.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to add, this is purely my own opinion here, but this generation of college students, I mean, they're extremely practical, right? So if somebody's going to invest time and resources in obtaining the bachelor's degree, they really want to know what's going to come from that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so you have somebody weighing the time and financial resources it's going to take for them to earn a bachelor's degree and a teaching license against the salary and working conditions that are out there waiting for them, and they're saying, no, I don't want to do that. So that's a problem we have to fix.
Right. Okay. Now, we're really getting very close to our end time. Is there anything quick that you want to add? Oh, how to contact your department? Then we need to get that in before our time has expired here. So we need to get that across to our listeners.
Sure. There are a couple of ways that that students can find information and contact us. If you just go to the UW-Parkside homepage, www.uwp.edu, there's a prominently placed request for information button that you can click on and ask for programmatic information from teacher education. If you would like to call and talk to somebody, the telephone number for the admissions office is 262-595-2355, and the telephone number for the teacher education advisor office is 262-595-2094.
Okay, Nancy, anything quick, 20 seconds, 30 seconds?
I'm married to a teacher, and two of my children are teachers. I tried to talk them out of it, but they like it. They're teaching, and I can't think of a better way to make a living. So right. I know you're an advocate, and so is Gary.
Okay, and that's wonderful. So to our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as I visited with Dr. Nancy Whitaker, chair of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside's Institute of Professional Educator Development, and Vice Provost Gary Wood. Thank you both for this most informative program. We wish you well in this most important program, preparing high-quality educators to serve in our public and private.